That's 9 p.m. in the East, 8 p.m. in the Central United States, 7 o'clock in the mountains. At KSAV, it's 6 p.m.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good evening, and we welcome you to the inaugural broadcast of Talking Twilight Zone, as the line from Casablanca goes, with the usual suspects, Bobby and Kitty and Ken. Now to kick off tonight's program, here's your host, Bob Neer. Hi, Bob.
Thank you, Dan. Before we get started, let me say how delighted we are to have you with us, replacing Dave, who has gone on to take care of his own program.
Well, Bob,
as announcer on this, our first program of Talking Twilight Zone.
Bob, let me
tonight's
just...
Tonight's show reminds me of a song from back in the 80s titled Everything Old is New Again, and that would be an appropriate title for this program because tonight's show is both a new beginning and an old continuation for us. As always, both Kitty and Ken are here with me as we embark on another round of reviews, commentary, and analysis of television's other classic series, The Twilight Zone. I say other because not long ago we concluded a 3.5-year, 78-program analysis of The Fugitive. Having said everything possible about that series and having picked it apart like a turkey at the end of Thanksgiving dinner and having had a great time trashing its fourth and final season as well as the ending, we decided to move on and trash another finally remembered TV series, although this might be a little more challenging because The Twilight Zone, even over 5 years, had few flaws in it. As for this show, the people are the same, the rules are the same, only the name has changed. The biggest change is that, unlike The Fugitive, we hope to review all 156 episodes of The Twilight Zone, probably at the rate of one per show, although this is open-ended, and since these stories are only 30 minutes long, we might start the next one in the second half of any program, and then continue it on the next show. Not all of these 156 stories are worth discussing for a half hour. Also, I want to put out a serious spoiler warning here. The Twilight Zone is well known for its vast array of ironic, trick, and surprise endings. On this program, we intend to give them all away, so if you've heard about a certain episode, and people have told you to make sure you see it one day, but you have not yet, you might want to tune us out for that week, because those surprise endings are at the very heart of what makes the series special. Many episodes are available to view free online from different websites. One of them has nearly 100 episodes. Links to all of this can be found on our homepage and message board at the Yahoo discussion group, Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed. Those reviews will begin 2 weeks from tonight. We thought we would start out with an overview of the series, what made it special, when and where we each found it, and why we are still talking about it. So let us begin. And in order to do that, a little time travel is needed, something Twilight Zone characters do often, either literally or through their imaginations. Today is May 19, 2009, as we near the conclusion of the first decade of the new century. 50 years ago, on Friday night, October 2nd at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, on the CBS television network, a new series premiered with a strange name hosted and very often written by a man with a very familiar name, Rod Serling. Serling was very well known at that time, having written several stories for TV's other great live drama of that decade, Playhouse 90. He had already won 3 Emmy Awards, so what was he doing here with his odd little TV series buried late on Friday nights when most young people are out, not home watching TV? That seemed more like science fiction than straight drama. And furthermore, what in the world was a Twilight Zone? Unlike my two co-hosts, I'm afraid I'm the only one here who was both alive at that time and old enough to stay up that late. My two co-hosts were either not yet born or not old enough. I've often said that The Twilight Zone is the very first TV series that baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 1964, one of the most influential generations in history, could call their own. And the more I say it, the more convinced I become. As an original baby boomer born just 1 year into that generation, I was there at the beginning. I was 12 and a half years old and just 6 months from becoming a teenager. Having grown up in the 50s, TV wasn't just a part of my life, it was my life. But unlike today, where kids seem to be born with their own TVs, to say nothing of personal computers and cell phones already waiting for them, kids back then had nothing. In my house, we had only one TV, and my mother ruled it with an iron fist. That is to say, I watched what she wanted to watch, period, starting with Ed Sullivan on Sunday nights and running the rest of the week. I had no input at all. In fact, our TV didn't even have a remote control, so you had to get up and walk all the way over to the TV to change the channel. If I didn't like what she wanted to watch, I had two options. I could sit there and tolerate it, or go to my room where there was only a radio. On that particular Friday evening, my older sister was probably out either on a date or with her friends. My father, by that hour, had usually gone into the kitchen to have coffee and read the day's newspaper. I was alone with my mother, but for some reason, she also decided to leave the room, leaving me alone with the TV, a rare event. Of course, I didn't dare change the channel, and luckily it was on CBS, because one of her favorite series had already been on to start the evening, and that was Rawhide, where a very young Clint Eastwood was just starting his remarkable career. So here I was, the perfect audience, just waiting to get hit with Rod Serling's new creation. I spent a considerable amount of time this past week searching the internet to see what else was on TV that evening. I finally did find the full TV schedule for that date, and I must say that really was nothing else on that my mother would be interested in, so it's no wonder she left the room. Like others, she had little knowledge of what the series was, although she figured it must be some sort of science fiction crap, as she would call it, and she surely had no interest in any of that. As for me, I was immediately fascinated by the series for a lot of reasons. First of all, I was alone and it seemed targeted right at me. Although I watched a lot of nighttime TV, it was all hand-me-downs. The TV series that were mine were all syndicated and on the late afternoon, everything from Superman to the Mickey Mouse Club. Now here was this new adult TV series. With the strange name, the weird opening theme music and narration, and the slightly ill-at-ease-looking, chain-smoking little man who appeared on screen at the end of each episode speaking with an odd cadence through tightly clenched teeth, warning me about entering the Twilight Zone, whatever that was. And best of all, everybody else in my house seemed to be ignoring it, a dream come true for a 12-year-old, at last, a late-night TV series I could call my own. My mother, of course, returned to the living room on subsequent Friday nights, but she never warmed up to the series. But seeing my interest in it and the fact that CBS left it there for the first few seasons, she left it on. And the love affair began to bloom. How much? Well, I don't remember exactly when, but sometime early into that first season or after it. With the series slowly building in popularity, they put out a small paperback book with basically the first half dozen or so programs in it, probably just the original scripts. I begged my mother to buy it for me. And she did, and not only did I read it from cover to cover over and over again, but for some reason I carried it with me everywhere I went, till it became so deteriorated you couldn't move it without it falling apart in your hands. Had my mother and father not left me alone that night with the TV, it's possible that none of this would have happened, although I might have found the series years later, as other generations have. That's how popular it would eventually become. Now that's my story, but the Twilight Zone could not possibly have become as lasting as it has been if it depended only on baby boomers who were there to start. Today, as we prepare to celebrate its 50th anniversary in October, there will even be a stamp with Rod Serling's picture on it released by the post office on a sheet with other longtime TV icons from that era. Other generations have also found it and still often seen on TV, on the sci-fi cable channel, very often as 2 or 3 day marathons, probably coming up soon on the 4th of July. There's also a new Yahoo discussion group, the Twilight Zone Revisited and Reviewed, that's us, and this new internet radio program, not bad, for a 50-year-old TV series with a long gray beard on it. For the rest of this program, I would like my co-host to tell us how and when they found the series and why it has stayed with them over the years. We will start with Kitty, who, although rumor has it, was born several decades after the show went off the air in 1964, still managed to find it. I have no idea how, but let's find out. Kitty?
Well, Bob, I wasn't born several decades later. I was actually born while the show was still on TV. However, it went off the air before I was cognizant of TV, let's put it that way. I came across that show just by sheer accident one day around 1977 or 78. I was in junior high. I was over at my dad's house on the weekend, and he had a color TV, and it, which was kind of neat because at my house, I still had the old black and white TV. Not everybody had color TVs, even in the 70s. But he had this color TV, and I was, one Saturday afternoon, I just decided to channel surf and see what was on TV. And I hit the channel to, I believe it was channel 11 here in our area, and this is before it became, I believe, the WB network or something like that. And it was just an independent station that just ran a lot of older stuff. And what struck me was that I came into this just right at the beginning, and the first thing I saw was an extremely young Robert Redford getting dressed as a police officer getting shot and pleading with an old woman to give him help. And I was like, I was just mesmerized by this. I thought, what is this show? And, you know, I just couldn't believe I was seeing this movie star on an old TV show. So that's what really hooked me in initially. And then the story just unfolded from there. And what was kind of neat about it, when it was on in syndication at that time, at that particular time, it would run from 4 in the afternoon to 5 in the afternoon. They would actually show two episodes back to back. So it was really a treat to be able to see this. And the other thing that struck me about it too was that because I was watching a color TV set, when I tuned into this and I found this show and it was in black and white, and then you get hooked in with the narration and the music, I really did feel like I was going into a Twilight Zone, because this show didn't look like anything else on this TV, because everything else on the TV was in color except for this show. And I just really liked it, and so I started tuning into it on Saturdays whenever I could remember it. And I soon found out that it came up in conversation, actually, at school, that there were other kids who watched the show, too, and we were all saying, wow, isn't that a great show? And then I was really surprised, one day I was talking to my grandmother, and I mentioned The Twilight Zone to her, and she said, oh, yeah, we used to watch that when it was first on TV. And I said, you did? And she said, yes. And I said, wasn't that a great show? And she said, oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch. And so that really tells you just how that show just has timeless appeal, no matter who you are, what age you are, or what decade you're watching it in. It really is, I think, Rod Serling's true masterpiece. And the funny thing is that I don't think he even realized, you know, what he was creating when he created it. But it's truly a great show, and it's always stuck with me. And I was just absolutely delighted a few years ago when I discovered the Sci-Fi Channel would run those marathons over the 4th of July. And the last few years, up until my husband gave me the entire series for Christmas, this past Christmas, but I used to look forward to the 4th of July weekend because I would make a point of watching the Twilight Zone marathon. So I got to see a lot of episodes that I had not seen by watching that marathon. And
So you had now, before you found it, what was that year, 77?
It was about 77 or 78.
So you had never heard of it at all?
No, I don't ever recall anybody ever bringing it up in conversation. Because I remember when I saw it and it came up as the Twilight Zone, I was like, what is the Twilight Zone? You know, it was just odd to me. And, you know, and I know my mother was aware of the show because, you know, she was in high school, or she was still living at home in 1959. So, you know, she had to have been around when my grandparents were watching it on TV. But for whatever reason, it just never came up in conversation.
Now, let me get one other thing straight. As far as I know, even to this day, there are still episodes you have not seen yet. Is that right?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, like the one that I most recently reviewed, that the
at our group, yeah.
Yeah, What You Need, that we haven't posted yet. That is actually one that I have not seen before. The one about the submarine that sinks the ship in World War II.
Right.
That one I had not seen before either. So yeah, there are some out there. I don't know that there's very many that I haven't seen, but there's probably at least, I'd say there's probably at least 20 or 25 that I haven't seen.
Okay, Kitty, let me interrupt here. It's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, I have a few things to say, and you have some emails to read, and then we'll let Ken come through and tell us how he found it. So let's take a break right now.
Boy, you folks are making me feel old. We'll be back with more Talking Twilight Zone on Sherevision Radio.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see.
Hi everyone, Susan McCrae, host of Getting to Know You. Please join me for part two of my interview with Steve March Torme, Tuesday. We're going to have a great time because he's going to talk about his family, his dad, why he moved to Wisconsin, and we're even going to hear a duet between he and his dad, Mel Torme. Please join in for a great time with Steve March Torme on Getting to Know You, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on KSAV.org. It's your Sherevision Radio Network. You know we're in the air everywhere.
Nothing but blue skies from now on.
And 17 minutes past the hour on Talking Twilight Zone. Here's Bob.
Thank you, Dan. This is a new show, but we have hardly left our past behind us in the dust. In fact, the Fugitive Views and Reviews is still open for business. We are reposting our original reviews and screen caps over there. And all 78 of our prior radio programs from Talking Fugitive are archived both at our website and at KSAV. We also have 4 books out on The Fugitive, and they are still available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble on the Internet. October 2nd, 1959, nearing the end of a decade still being celebrated today, and just 2 months away from what will turn out to be one of the most turbulent and violent decades of the century. And across America, a new TV series is about to premiere, and it starts very calmly with actor and first guest star Earl Holliman walking down a lonely road until he reaches a rather bucolic-looking little town. Everything seems normal, at least on the surface, until he realizes he's the only living thing in the town. The Twilight Zone begins with Where Is Everybody? And we'll begin our reviews right there, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Twilight Zone. And now let's hear from another old-timer, only he's not as old as I am. Let's hear how Ken came up on the series and why he's still here talking about it. Ken?
Well, 1959, that would have made me 5 years old, Bob. So,
you were in bed already.
I had 3 must-see television programs I had to watch, even as a 5, 6, 7-year-old. We were allowed to watch TV in our house.
Uh-huh.
And that's when small kids, you know, they got to have something to do back in 1959 when you come home from school.
Right.
And I had 3 shows, The Three Stooges, Superman.
Oh, of course.
And The Twilight Zone. And
right.
I do remember it, even as a kid, because it affected me.
And you watched it at 5?
Yes.
Wow.
Because, you know, that was a popular thing to do in those days, you know, 59, 60, 61.
Right.
You know, when you come home from school, what do you do? You know, you have your toys.
Yeah, but Twilight Zone was on at 10 p.m.
Yeah, that's a little late for a 5-year-old, isn't it?
No, I remember we were here on the West Coast. I lived in Los Angeles.
Wasn't it still on at 10 o'clock, though?
I just remember it being on. Now,
okay.
Whether they did repeats
right.
or however they did it, I don't remember the 10 o'clock hour. It was a Friday night. I think I remember that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was. I lived in the east, and it was 10 o'clock in the east. Yeah.
Was it 10 o'clock? I think here in the West Coast, maybe it was a little different. I'll have to ask my parents on that. But I do remember the show, and I tell you why, because it had an effect on me. I remember Mirror Image. That was the one where the girl sees her duplicate in the train station. And as a little boy, I grew up believing that there was a duplicate of me somewhere in the world. I really do. And obviously, as the seasons went on, a lot of the episodes, you know, they impressed little kids. I could tell you hundreds of stories just from the Twilight Zone. You know, the monster on the wing, the little kid in that small town, you know, turned to Scarecrow and all that. We'll get into all these episodes.
Did it scare you as a series?
Yes, it was one of those ones where you had to watch with my other brothers and sisters. I had six sisters and a brother.
Right.
So it was a big house. And we all watched the same programs. And we stayed with all five seasons. I remember season five, they got into the hour episodes, and that got a little different. But yeah, that was must-see TV.
Right, and it's unusual that somebody so young would get so much out of what essentially is an adult TV series.
Right.
I mean, it was that's why I said in my opening remarks, I think that it really was a series. I don't know that Rod Serling saw it this way, because of course he was in the middle of it. But it was kind of it was made for baby boomers. It was made for that generation, and it was just sitting there waiting. I mean, somebody was going to find it. And I think the generation before that probably would not have been all that interested. But if you were alive any time during the 50s, and it's like you just said, you had this other show, you had Superman and stuff like that, and the Three Stooges, that those weren't adult things that were likely to be on in prime time. So here was a series that really appealed to very young people. But I mean, I wanted to ask on this initial program, from both of you, and I'll start out with Kitty. How much of an impact do you think Rod Serling being on the show himself had on it? Because you and I spoke privately about a week or so ago, and I can't remember any other TV program in which a person lent not only his name, but himself to the series as it was on the air, other than Alfred Hitchcock, who came on to introduce stories on his own show. Except he had nothing to do with the show. He didn't direct any of them. He didn't write any of them. He didn't do anything. He was just there to lend his name to it. Serling actually wrote 91 of the episodes in the first 3 years, so it was different. So, Kitty, do you think that there was something special about seeing him there? In the first season, he only comes on at the end to say, what's the next week? That always impressed me. Did it impress you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But remember, I saw, the first time I saw that show, it was a later season episode that I saw, and that was one of the things that struck me immediately was that you saw Robert Redford get shot, and this little old lady finally goes out to help him, and then the camera switches
right
to Rod Serling, and I was
just... He's standing off on the side.
Yes, I was very taken aback by that. I was like, what is up with this? I thought it was a very cool effect. What I thought was really neat about it was that you had Rod Serling was kind of your reality check,
right.
I think, in that series, because, you know, you're seeing this very strange story unfolding, but then here's Rod Serling to basically bring you back to reality, to basically say, this is a story. This is our story tonight. You know, this is what it's about. You know, so it's like, I mean, it's almost like enjoy the story, but, you know, don't get too deeply involved in it because it's just a story. You know, you're not really in the Twilight Zone. You're here to enjoy this story and have fun with it.
You know, it was almost personalized. It was as though
Absolutely.
You were there for the filming and Serling was there with you and you're standing off on the side and he's saying, take a look at this story. It looks pretty interesting, doesn't it? And it gave kind of a personal side to it. And I think that was one of the things that struck me right away. Now, I want to ask Ken about another aspect of the series, and that is the fact that the thing that always drew me into it and still does to this day, even though I know how they all end, is the fact that just about every single story has some sort of ironic or twist or surprise ending to it. Ken, how much of a part of the program is that? That was always my favorite part. And it was challenging to see if you could figure out what it was before it happened, although to your advantage to not even try, don't you think?
Right. Science fiction, you know, in the 50s and 60s was very popular. And you talk with your classmates at school, you know, in kindergarten, first grade, you know, you talk with your friends. And this show was popular from the start. You know, everybody talked about it. I don't know about you guys, but TV was a big influence on kids in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the end of the story, you know, what's going to happen. I remember that very first episode, Where Is Everybody? That was, you know, we talked about it. You know, I don't know what you guys, you know, talked about at school, but we talked about TV.
So did I.
Yeah.
No, it was my life mainly. I mean, television came along before TV. Kids went outside and played, but now all of a sudden television was there, and they stayed inside. Now everybody's complaining about the fact that kids don't go out because they're on the computer all day. So not a whole lot has changed. Something comes along and takes it away. But for me, after you've watched the series for a while, after you've watched it for a season, you get to expect those little twist endings. So you sit there and you wait for them. But I would say this, you have to be careful about that, because it would be to your advantage not to think too much while you're watching this show. To let Rod Serling, especially if he has a part of writing an episode, take you there, because the thing that always impressed me is that you watch a particular story and you get to the end of it and find out what it was all about, really, and you go, I can't believe I got fooled on this. It was so obvious from the beginning that this is what was going on. How could I possibly not? You think to yourself, well, I'm smart enough to know that. And yet, that was the kick for me to actually be carried along with the story and to see what the ending was going to be. Did you find that true for you, Kitty, that one of the best parts is to see where it's going?
Yeah, and sometimes I was able to guess what outcome was. But, you know, I've always found it to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and the stories are really very simple. That's what most amazes me. They're not very convoluted, they're not very deep, and yet they're interesting. Serling proved that you could take a very basic story and make it interesting without having to get... I mean, it's a half an hour TV series, except for that time when they went to an hour, which I thought was a big mistake. It's a half an hour TV series. You take out commercials and all of that, what are you looking at, 25, 26 minutes at the most? Then you've got the introduction with him coming on, and he comes on again at the end. You got less than 25 minutes of story to do. So I thought his particular talent was in being able to be a great storyteller and to do short stories. When I was a kid, Ken talks about the things that you liked when you were a kid. I liked short stories. I didn't want to read an entire book, so I simply wanted short stories more than anything. And I thought that Serling was a masterful short storyteller. He simply knew how to do it, knew how to get into the story quickly and to make it interesting, because for young people like that, like Ken was, at 5 years old, you don't have a great attention span. So you have to tell the story quickly and let it go at that. So anyway, we've got less than a minute left, and we just wanted to do an overview of the series. In 2 weeks, we'll be back for the very first episode. We'll do reviews. We'll take phone calls. I'm sorry Kitty didn't get a chance to read those emails, but we'll do it first thing on our next program. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Kitty. And we'll see you back here in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And thank you, Bob.
Alrighty.
I just wanted to point out one thing. At the beginning of the show, you said that I was Dave's replacement. No one can ever replace Dave.
Oh, absolutely.
I am merely his successor.
That's true.
I'm Dan White. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.